cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
We want to get to one of the most read stories on the Bloomberg today. And I got to say, our Carly Wanna of Bloomberg giving it a shout out on our morning call today. It's about how the often historically private Wall Street culture is being hit with tell-all TikToks from the tell-all Gen Z culture. So let's get to it with Ms. Erlania Igafapulu. She is Bloomberg News personal finance reporter with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Missy joining Paul and myself. So Missy, first of all, Wall Street's reading it. Bloomberg's reading it. It is, as we said, among the most read on the Bloomberg. What exactly is going on?
So if you needed any proof that there's currently a generation clash happening on Wall Street, like, this is the proof. You have a bunch of young entry-level bankers, sometimes analysts, other times interns, that are really coming into the office for the first time during the pandemic, since the pandemic happened. And what they're doing when they're showing up at the offices is doing these so-called day in the life videos, which really took off during the pandemic. They're happening across every industry, and now they've come to Wall Street. And what these videos show are several details about what life is like. So, for example, what food they're eating, what they're wearing to the office, what their commute looks like. But oftentimes, they'll also dish out on details of, like, how long they're working. And so that is something that I think is causing a lot of conundrum within Wall Street, because on the one hand, this is the best marketing these banks could ask for. If
right.
you think about the fact that, yeah, they're struggling to retain young talent, and these videos are hitting Gen Zers right where they spend most of their time, which is TikTok. But on the other hand, these are banks that really want to control their own narrative. Like, they have social media policies, and yep. they need to be able to, like, tell employees what they can and cannot do. And I think for the banks, it's just become the situation where they can't really control it. They don't want to stop it, but they're trying to.
So I want to ask the Wall Streeter, who spent many years on Wall Street, what, like,
I can just imagine how this could go terribly wrong. So, for example, you know, a day in the life, and you show me what's on your screen, and I see a spreadsheet of company XYZ, and say, oh my goodness, are they doing an IPO, an M&A trade? What's going on? That type of thing. So I would guess the compliance departments at these firms, which have quadrupled in size since I was on Wall Street, that's the big area of growth on Wall Street is compliance. What are they thinking?
Well, I think that's just what they're trying to manage, right? They're trying to do whatever they can to make sure that their employees are aware of what is and isn't allowed. So, for example, filming on the trading floor, big no.
Okay.
Yeah. Filming on screens, big no. And I think these Gen Zers are willing to work around the rules. They're not trying to get themselves in trouble.
And they're not saying firm sometimes, right?
Well, they actually, that's part of the trick here. Well, they're not. I mean, they have their names out there, so it wouldn't take too long for you to figure out where they work, but they're not going out and like speaking of on behalf of their companies. They're going out and speaking of behalf of themselves, what they're doing and what their experience in investment banking is like. And so they're leaving the names of the firms out. And like, listen, some firms have had to ask people to take down their videos. Goldman Sachs has done so. Bank of America has done so. But there are other banks that are really embracing this. Like, for example, Morgan Stanley this year in their intern swag bag put in phone ring lights, which are these little lights that you
did
can
you
put on your
swag
phone.
Bags?
No.
Okay.
I did not. I got an HP 12C.
Did you get martini lunches?
No, I missed that by just a couple of years.
Just checking.
But I got the greatest bull market of all time.
Okay, there you go. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, there you go. The things are changing. And I think that they're putting in ring lights to encourage interns to film. They also encourage them to use a specific hashtag called MyMSSummer so they can like aggregate all of the content in one place. And so they're really embracing it. They get that this is something Gen Z can't live without. And so the question is, how can it become something that both sides can peacefully agree on?
Do we have any outliers where some firms that just said, absolutely not. If I see a video up, that's it.
I mean, I don't think so. And I don't think they can afford to do that.
I think you're right. I think that's how this generation communicates. They're much freer with what information they're willing to share. And I think as corporations, just in general, not just Wall Street investment banks, you got to figure out how to
appeal
to that.
Totally.
Yep.
Well, and I feel like that's one of the big things, right, that Wall Street is trying to figure out at this point, right, is how to tap into that younger investor. I mean, you hear about it constantly, especially as there's a lot of startups and a lot of competition among kind of younger, you know, firms that appeal to a younger generation. So I can see the quandary.
Totally. And I think part of the point the story makes is we spoke to a lot of these young analysts that work at these banks, and they were women oftentimes, and a lot of people of color as well. And as Wall Street sort of grapples with diversity issues and also sort of making sure enough women are in the workforce, but also people of color, when you have these people that become these voices across social media for these banks, I mean, it really opens up the possibility for people who may not have thought themselves as people who belong in like the Wall Street, you know, white boy culture, now feeling like, okay, maybe if this person's doing it, I can do it. And so they want that megaphone out there. But again, in a way that doesn't, you know, go against all the regulatory scrutiny that they have to deal with and all the confidentiality that has been, you know, part of Wall Street for a really long time.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Paul. Would you do it? Like, if you were there at a Wall Street firm, would you tell, like, say, would you advise and say, no, younger, like, no, don't do it?
No, I would not, because I know how central it is to those, that younger generation. And again, you have to manage them. You can't just, that's part of managing, is kind of figure out what's important to them.
All right. Well, Missy, it's a really cool story. And as we said, it's been among the most read on the Bloomberg terminal. Missy Igafapoulou, she is personal finance reporter at Bloomberg News. We love reading her reporting, joining us here in studio.
When cyber criminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Video.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We're going to talk about Petco because Petco Health and Wellness, We did see the stock under some pressure in today's session. This after the company cut its adjusted earnings per share and net revenue guidance for the full year. Baird coming out and saying this forecast reset was much needed, quotation marks there. Let's see what the head of the company has to say. He is back with us. He's the chairman and CEO of Petco, Ron Coughlin, back here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Nice to have you here. How are you?
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're tired, you sound like. Long day?
Yeah, I'm good.
Talk to us about the quarter and the business.
Yeah, great companies grow even in tough economies. So we had a 4% comp, which is a good number. We did not have the inventory issues that other companies are talking about. Most retailers are talking about inventory, excess inventory, and having to discount. We didn't have that situation. We continue to see a positive mix shift towards premium and super premium brands. So a lot of good news, but at the same time, there is some pressure from the inflation on discretionary items like toys, tennis balls, leashes, and that pressure, that's our highest profit area. So that puts some pressure on the P&L.
So in your P&L, talk to us about, I guess, inflation in terms of your cost of goods sold. Where do you guys see it in your P&L?
Yeah, so freight would be a big one. Labor would be another one. Labor we pretty much have in our model, but I don't think anybody had the freight inflation that we saw in their model because the gas really popped in March, April type time.
It coming down, is it helping you?
It's starting to come down.
Yeah,
but the freight gets tied to the inventory, so it doesn't show up in the P&L till later in Q3 and into Q4.
I have to say, when you talk about toys, I actually have been in a store on Second Avenue, bought a bunch of toys. I want to do a shout out to Cheddarly, who was really lovely because I have a dog, a puppy that chews through things in 30 seconds. So I came up with an armful of toys and I said, help me, what's going to, last? And she was really wonderful. I have to say, though, I noticed a lot of empty shelves. And I was curious, in the dog toy area, is it supply chain problems? What was it? Or is it just people... I don't know. It looked like you were sold out.
Yeah. Well, sometimes that's a good thing, good problem to have.
Well, that's why I'm curious. I'm trying to understand.
So, there's not a single vendor that said, I think there's going to be a million new pets in 2020, another million new pets in 21, and elevated pets this year.
Yeah.
So all of the vendors have been scaling their manufacturing. The bad news is that the supply lagged the demand. The good news is that supply and capacity is coming up now. I was in a brand new plant in Dallas for Honest Kitchen. Hills just announced major investments in their manufacturing. So that capacity, it really takes about 2 years to get new capacity up, and that capacity is coming up now. Okay. And we're seeing improving supply week after week.
Talk to us about the demand side of this business, the pet business. It seemed like during the pandemic, a lot of folks went out and got themselves a pet, a cat, a dog, something like that. I'm not sure where those owners are today, where those pets are today, but how did that impact your business and how are you dealing with it today?
Well, if you look at our business, we're up 34% on a 3-year basis. Yep. Our e-com business is up 140%. Our digital business up, our services business up 60%. So we have scaled tremendously on the back of that. But make no mistake about it. Today, 2022, the predictions are for it to still be elevated in terms of pet adoptions versus 2019 pre-pandemic. And those stories about there being more relinquishments are really just stories. Relinquishments are below pre-pandemic. So the supply of pet and the pet universe is only growing. And we tend to do better in terms of capturing more than our fair share of new pets.
So why don't you guys pull in your guidance?
It's really that pressure on disposable income.
That's it.
And supplies. Yeah. If you look at our food, our food's up double digits. You look at our
in terms of growth or sales?
Growth. You look at our services, up double digits. It's really that segment of supplies, toys, balls, leashes, collars, that kind of thing. The rest of the business is highly, highly recession resistant. And as I said, we continue to trade up, whether that's in food to premium kibble or fresh frozen, or even our Ready fashion brand. That was up double digit, which is kind of a higher end supplies brand.
Do you talk recession at all?
Of course we do. We have to plan for every eventuality.
Do you expect it?
You know, most people right now, I saw a story the other day, 70% prediction of recession. So we need to be planful for that.
Yeah.
So we're doing two things. One is making sure that our cost structure is prepared to navigate through that. And the second thing is making
sure. What does that mean? I always wonder what that, like, does it mean not hiring?
There's hiring components. There's location components. There's, travel components, you cut back in all the areas that aren't revenue generating, direct revenue generating, to make sure that if your revenue is impacted, your cost structure is not out of line with your revenue profile. The second piece, though, is making sure you're more attractive to customers who are going through a recession, right? Mm-hmm. So things like bundles, right? Bundled tennis balls, things like our Vital Care program, which is a membership program that gets discounts across our portfolio. People can save $300 with that program. Mega packs. Mm-hmm. So you change your offering or you adjust your offering for the consumer mindset as they navigate through a recession.
Well, I share a condo building with Harry, who is a pit bull with a very bad attitude and anger management problems that he needs to work on. But in any case, he gets his Chewy delivery every week or two. Talk to us about your digital business, how you deal with some of those online competitors, and kind of how your business is faring.
Well, first of all, we can help Harry with our trainers. Our trainers are excellent and get his attitude in the right place. We also have repeat delivery, and our repeat delivery business is growing significantly ahead of the competitor that you mentioned. Yep. That's part of our recurring revenue plays, and recurring revenue is important in terms of line of sight to revenue. So our recurring revenue customer growth was 54%. So it was very, very strong. We love those customers because it's a guaranteed customer and very sticky.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, retention. So it sounds like once you've got somebody within the Petco network, they tend to stay, or do they?
We've had very strong retention. The dynamic right now is we continue to bring in new customers. So one of the strengths in the quarter was we brought in 325,000 new customers into our franchise.
Wow.
The competitor that you mentioned bled customers last quarter.
Is that unusual, that number?
This is our 14th consecutive quarter in a row adding customers. So we've continued to add customers, which speaks to the strength of our model and our marketing. So you have more customers coming in. Those customers that we're churning were lower value kind of pickup in the pandemic. The high value customers who've been with us for more than a year, are spending more.
So your loyalty program, that's the Vital Care program.
Correct.
Right. So my analyst here at Bloomberg Intelligence, who covers your stock, she says to ask you about Vital Care. How does it work? Is it successful? What are the metrics you guys look at there?
Yeah. So for $19.99 a month, you get your checkups, you get grooming discounts, you get discounts on products. We're ahead of our expectations. We cited that we're up at 285,000 members in the Vital Care program. And for this type of economy, it's a perfect program. You'll see us make some announcements shortly on Vital Care to further step that up. So we're very pleased with it. There's nobody else who can offer it, right? Because the mass players don't have grooming and vet. The online players don't have those type of assets.
Yep.
We're the only ones that can bring that all together. The only other pet specialty scale player doesn't own their vets, right? We own our own vets, so we're able to bring
own the vets. Okay.
Petco in place. And we ingested 800 new veterinary professionals with the purchase of Thrive, the other half of our joint venture with a vet network. So we have we're over 200 vets in our hospital, in our stores. When I first met you, we were probably at like 10 or 20. So
that's a big
difference.
We're
scaling rapidly. It's pretty much the fastest vet rollout in history.
Well, how often is it you bring somebody in for either a vet visit or some grooming and they're going to buy something? I'm just curious about the connection, the correlation.
Well, here's the numbers.
Yeah.
When we put a vet hospital in one of our stores, we get a 4 to 5 point center store lift in merchandise. That's despite taking out 2,500 square feet of merchandise footage. Right, so we take out 2,500 to make the vet, but we still get a 4 to 5 point lift because of the traffic and also because of the type of customer that is going in to see a vet. They're the higher end customers.
How many stores do you have today?
Yeah, around 1,450.
And they're all U.S., right?
We're number one in Mexico, offline.
Okay.
And then we have an initiative with Canadian Tire for some store in stores.
Okay, so how do you how do you see your store count as a part of your growth story? Are we adding stores here? Is there geographic areas you need to get into or muscle up in?
Yeah, so we've done the culling where there was less profitable. Okay. Now we're back into a growth mode. We'll add 15 in the back half of this year, partially those small town rural stores that I talked about, which we're very excited about. It's an $8 billion addressable market for us, mm-hmm. and some high growth geographies.
Okay.
Well, how much of it too is, it's interesting what you said about the vets, because you guys, the doctors are yours. Are you guys competing increasingly with other private equity? Because it does, I feel like I know my vet, who used to be a standalone, has been swooped up in like these networks of vets. Like I see this.
Really?
Yes.
That's
exactly.
Play?
Yes. So I'm curious what that means for you, though, competing for those vets.
There's been a lot of private equity action in the vet space, which gives us our opportunity because there's very high multiples being paid for those vets.
Yeah.
So after you pay that kind of money, then there's a lot of pressure to upgrade efficiency.
They're not as much
sales,
fun, I'm going to tell you. After, no offense, the PE guys.
Yeah, well, we love our PE.
I know you do.
CVC and CPP have been phenomenal.
I know you do.
But that said, we have a different approach. We allow the vets to practice medicine as they see fit, which is important. We give them flexibility in their hours because we have a lower customer acquisition because we have traffic coming in to our stores. So, and then we also offer stock. So our time to fill roles is lower than the industry average. Our retention is better. We have some of the highest satisfaction is our vet employees. Mm-hmm. So it's been very, very strong for us.
I'm just looking at the HDS function, the holders function, and you're right. There are private equity owners for your company.
Yep.
So if I was at KKR and they drop a deal, I have to do a pet deal? I mean, what's the story behind your company and your private equity relationships? How did that come about and kind of what's the plan from here?
Yeah, they bought it multiple years ago, CVC and CPP. As I said, they've been phenomenal. They've supported us really investing in the business, investing in things like vet, investing in things like remodel, fresh frozen, and that's really enabled our growth. You know, I talked about 34% three-year growth. They've enabled it. And, you know, there was a moment of truth about 4 years ago when I said I wanted to invest in compensation and benefits. And, you know, the reputation is that's not where they tend to support, and not our PE, but in general PE. And the answer was absolutely, we need to do that. We need to make sure we're treating the team properly. And they've supported all the investments we've made. Actually, our average wage is now over $17 an hour. And today we announced that we're over $15 as a base wage rate. We've absorbed every benefits hike at the company level, not passed it off. And that's with the full support of CVC and CPP. So they've been phenomenal partners in turning around the business.
Yeah, it does seem like it's played out really well for you. And I just, like, my experience is that it became a very different experience, you know, taking my pups to the vet. One thing I want to ask you, where's growth going forward? Because you do have some, you know, international exposure, Ron. So where do you continue to grow?
Yeah. We have a $40 billion addressable market that we're just leaning into. So if you look at the vet market, it's a $30 billion market.
It's massive.
We only have 200 vets stores so far. We said we're going to get up to 700, 800 vets. So that's one area. The second thing is small town rural. I talked about an $8 billion market. That is exploding from a population standpoint. Our first store is doing very, very well. You'll see us lean into that. Third is RX. RX is a scale addressable market. Again,
it's a mess in general.
There's a
like,
lot of
like, I think there's ways to make it easier, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And provide a holistic solution there. And then the last thing I would cite is insurance. Insurance, if you go to Europe, insurance is about 10% penetrated for pet parent. Here, it's 2 to 3% penetrated. So we have an offer. It's growing double digit, but we can go even faster, and we'll have some news shortly on that front.
Is growth via acquisition in Europe, perhaps? Is that an option? Is that something that's on the table where you guys feel like you've got enough opportunity here in the U.S., North America?
Yeah, I like Mexico and maybe extending off of that.
Okay.
We don't really comment on acquisitions, but that's a pretty well-served market now.
Hey, just have a few minutes left here, and I think it's an interesting week where we are talking big macro things, and I know we've touched on some of them with you in the past. You know, when you look at what seems to be conflicting signals, Ron, within our economy, whether it's labor data seems to be very strong, but you see continued weakness within the housing market, and in other areas. How do you see it, or how does it kind of factor what you do in terms of your longer term strategy at the company?
So let me
Do you guys stay at home? Are you back at your offices talking Jackson Hole and Jay Powell? No, seriously. So,
I'll break it into two.
Yeah.
Right. In terms of the here and now, navigating through choppy waters, our plan is to navigate through what we assume are going to be similar economic environment to today. Right. We're not economists. We say, okay, well, let's assume this is going to be steady state for 6-12 months. How would we navigate through that? And that's part of the revised conservative guide that we put out today, was let's make sure that in this environment we can deliver or over deliver. From a long term strategy standpoint, our long term strategy is a winner. Right. The category is going to grow 7%. We continue to gain share in areas like super premium, gain share in vet, gain share in digital, basically where all the profit pools are. Mm-hmm. So it's all about executing against our strategy. So in the short term, navigate through the choppy waters, assume they're not going to change in the short term. In the long term, continue executing on our strategy. And that's the other thing in the financials, is we have such amazing growth opportunities that we want to continue to invest in those growth opportunities so that we can take advantage of them coming out of this economic situation.
What's the concern that your private equity shareholders have, do you think? What's the big thing that keeps them awake? And how's your balance sheet? Is competition? What do you think? What do you hear from them when you go make your presentation to them?
Yeah, balance sheet is strong and getting better every single day. We've had a significant reduction in our debt levels, and that's healthy. They've been supporters all along. They've been along for the ride since minute one, both strategically as well as what we've done for our people, like I said. So I think they'd say, hey, just keep executing on the strategy. It's going to work. We have a phenomenal category. We're very well positioned in that category. So it's all a matter of making it through this current economic environment and then executing our strategy to win.
Do you feel like you have great visibility or decent visibility? You did talk about, like, you know, why you reined in some of your estimates. The visibility for next year? Is it a tough call at this point?
Well, you know, the nice thing is one of the factors should be gone, right? We're overlapping unprecedented stimulus.
Yeah.
And that factor will not be there, right, in when we head into Q1 of next year. So that is very good. Where inflation goes, I think everyone has different theories on that. So as I said, we're assuming steady state on that. And if it's better, awesome. That's going to show up in our supplies business. You know, it'll be really good not to have the noise of the stimulus in the year ago.
Yeah, it would be nice for the conversation to move along. We don't often get to do such deep dives.
Yeah,
you have been a gem, and I feel like we covered some really smart ground. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Ron Coughlin, he is Chief Executive Officer at Petco, of course, joining us here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio.
When cyber criminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, good stuff there. Looking at these markets here, not much going on today, but everybody obviously focusing on the Jackson Hole get-together, Fed Chairman Jay Powell, what will he say? We're done with the earnings, so we're really good. Focus really goes back to the Federal Reserve, but a lot of folks are trying to figure out, is this a dead cat bounce that we had just coming off of this bottom of this longer-term bear market? Are we onto something in terms of the upside here? Let's bring in a professional to talk about that. Tom Plum, President and Chief Investment Officer of Plum Funds, joins us on the phone from Madison, Wisconsin. Go Badgers. Tom, what's your market call here? I mean, we had that pretty solid 21% move down in the S&P 500. We retraced about half of that, giving a little bit back. How should we think about this market?
Oh, thanks, Paul and Carol. It's great to be on again. One of the things, every bear market that bottoms out, it starts out that the big question is this a bear market bounce, or is it actually the start of something new? We won't know, obviously, until 6-9 months from now, and it'll be very easy looking backwards. But what we have been seeing is that there's segments of our economy that are very strong, and there's segments of our economy that are very weak. And we expect that the overall, this is portends to a modest downturn at the most. We've had two quarters where they were negative, but it wasn't negative GDP, it was negative GNP. And we expect that we'll get through the fall's buying season with back to school, the holiday seasons, and that we'll actually start to see some rationalization in these markets, and that this could very well be the start of a recovery.
Hmm. All right. So does that mean you are actively putting new money to work in equities?
Carol, as you recall, we're a balanced fund, so we have a range. Right now, we're very close to the highest end of our range, which is in the high 60% in stocks. Mm-hmm. But we're also pretty comfortable now in extending some of our maturities in the bond market, because as the Fed finishes up raising these short-term rates, what you have seen is a shift in the shape of the yield curve. And you've actually gotten some decent returns of over, you could pick 4 to 4.5, 5% on high grade commercial bonds right now that are only out 5-6 years to maturity.
So, Tom, I did space and I did forget you were a balanced fund. So it's just kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just all the Jackson Hole talk. I also didn't get a good night's sleep. Hey, you know, our Markets Live blog, they do surveys, pulse surveys, and they said which will win in the next month, stocks or bond? Which will have a better volatility adjusted return over the next month, U.S. stocks or treasuries? What do you think? You've got to play in both worlds.
Well, right now we think that the stock market will do better over the next month, primarily because you're not going to have new news on interest rates. We don't expect anything from the Fed until their September meeting. We don't think there'll be any radical change in between meetings. And so there's not going to be a lot of new news other than obviously everyone's watches the monthly inflation figures.
So I see in your holdings Expedia. So I guess Carol and I were just talking about, it seems like a lot of young people are traveling a lot, particularly to Europe here. So you have Expedia. Presumably that's a bullish call on global travel.
I apologize because Expedia is actually a bond. We do have Booking, which is the company, obviously, that is also in the online travel setup and mostly international. And there, it is a play. Obviously, you see that what's happening in our airports, there's an incredible amount of pent-up demand for travel and entertainment, as opposed to maybe we need some rationalization in some of the goods products like clothing and things like that, home furnishings. But for the travel industry, it looks to us that it's very strong and it's going to be reflected in the stocks that we own.
Paul, we're batting 1,000 today. Yep. Tom, you have to forgive us. It's just been a long week already. Hey, one thing, one name that you do like, and I was thinking about this too, in a world where we thought, you know, post-World War II, that maybe we wouldn't need so much more, post-Cold War, we wouldn't need so much defense. And if anything, I feel like we probably need more than ever. When I think about the amount of the U.S. aid going to Ukraine, not being critical of it, but it just reminds me that government spending on defense, it is out there in a big way. You like Raytheon?
Yes, we do. And Raytheon has two major plays. It has commercial aviation, which is obviously very important with Pratt & Whitney, and you're seeing a big demand build up and backlog for commercial planes. But they also have a significant part of their business in defense and defense electronics. And the United States spends more money by far than both China and Russia combined on defense. But we have been somewhat complacent, and there's areas that we're not the leaders. And one of those is, for example, hypersonic missiles. There's been some talk that we've had some issues with our tests, but Raytheon just announced two major successes on their tests. They also are using a lot of the artificial intelligence to make sure that they're streamlining the process and developing some of these new products that unfortunately looks like we're going to be needing for quite a while.
Tom, just real quick here, one that really got my attention, Yum China. What's the call there?
And just got about 30 seconds.
Well, Yum China is KFC of China, and it's also Pizza Hut in that area. You're going to, just like it opened up in the United States gradually a couple of years ago, China's is in the process of opening up, even though the headlines are, they take two steps forward and one step back.
Right.
And this is one of the restaurant chains that continues to be very successful in China. And we think that they're going to be, by moving their headquarters to Hong Kong, that they're actually going to stay in favor with the Chinese government.
Well, love talking names with you as always. Tom Blum, he is President and Chief Investment Officer at Plum Funds, joining us on this Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.